The next matter on our calendar for oral argument today is State of Minnesota versus Daniel Roy O'Day. Good morning, counsel. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counsel for appellant, you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you state your name and identify the party that you represent when you begin your argument, because we are making an audio recording of the argument, and that is the only recording that is permitted. I will also let you know that the podium and can be raised and lowered to meet your comfort.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith. I represent appellant State of Minnesota in this appeal. Under Minnesota's tax evasion statutes, a person who is required to file a tax return or required to pay a tax who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat a tax or tax law by failing to file the return or failing to pay the tax is guilty of a felony. The actus reus of both relevant clauses is specified by the word failing. And the mens rea required is, as this court held in its non-precedential decision, State versus Beatty, a specific intent to purposefully evade or defeat a tax obligation now and in the future. Simply put, Section 289A.63, Subdivision 1, requires the state to prove that a singular act, failing to file returns or pay taxes, was done with a specific intent, purposefully evading a tax obligation both now and the future. Respondent, who runs his own business, repeatedly failed to file state income tax returns and failed to pay income tax for nearly a decade.
Which seems to me to support, or at least provide probable cause to support a gross misdemeanor, knowingly failure to pay. But what is it about the record here available at the time of the omnibus hearing that pushes us to that higher mens rea level?
Certainly, and I was going to the additional facts. He did this. He failed to pay his income tax returns and failed to file his returns and failed to pay his income tax, despite having consistently filed his own state income tax returns from at least 2006 to 2014, despite having started his own business, registered the LLC with the Secretary of State, despite his business having received substantial payments and those being noticed on 1099s over the course of just 3 years, and despite having received gambling winnings in excess of $100,000, whether those are net winnings or not, the record's not clear at this point, and having completed tax forms for that income. Given these facts, taken in their totality and all of the other facts set forth in the exhibits that were received as part of the omnibus record, there is a reasonable inference to be drawn from the facts that the defendant had the willful purpose to evade the tax obligation.
So, Mr. Smith, if I could interrupt for a minute. So let's assume that there's more than enough here to establish willfulness, not just knowing, but intentional, not paying taxes. Where that gets me is failing to pay taxes. But the statute for a felony goes on to talk about wherever the statute is here.
The attempt to evade?
The attempt to evade or defeat, which if you look at, you know, just dictionary definitions of those two words, seems to require more than just a failure. I mean, there's kind of an element of a subterfuge there or something. There's a little more there than just failure. So how is that met or satisfied here?
Well, I think I have two answers to that. The first is that I think we have to look at this cumbersome adjectival phrase in its entirety. Mm-hmm. Because what we really have, and it's an appositive in the failure to pay, but it's a phrase that begins with who. It's a phrase that describes a person. Mm-hmm. So it's a person who is required to file or pay, and then willfully attempts to evade by doing a specific act. And that's the big thing that makes our statute, for example, different than the federal statute that was interpreted in Spies and which respondent relies upon. Here, the Minnesota legislature has said that the only act that is encompassed by these provisions is the failure to pay or the failure to file a return. Keeping a false set of books, is standing by itself, isn't a different isn't a crime under Minnesota's tax evasion statute. It might be under the federal statute if that's part, if there's evidence that shows that that was an attempt to evade or the tax. But what the legislature has done in Minnesota is said, when you had this willful purpose to attempt to evade, that mens rea coupled with a failing to file or failing to pay, that's enough. And it doesn't take some sort of false claim on a return. In fact, Subdivision 2 of 28963 tells us that Subdivision 1 doesn't require a false claim in a return because Subdivision 2 criminalizes a material misstatement, material false claim in a required return. So it's not that. So what we're looking at is the totality of the circumstances that evince somebody's guilty mind. That's what we're looking at. That's what we ask juries to do and judges to do all the time. And it's the circumstances gathered together. So I don't think you can separate the willful purpose, the willful from the purpose to evade. And I think in Beatty, that's what this court recognized.
So explain that a little more. Because it doesn't just say willfully fails to file.
Right.
It says willfully in any manner to evade or defeat by failing to file it. So I agree with you that it's not, you don't have to show dissembling in the return itself, an intentional misstatement in the return itself. You just have to fail to file. But, yeah, so how...
Okay.
Where do we draw the line between what's a gross misdemeanor and what's a felony? When is it just, failed to file for 4, 5, 6 years in a row, paid taxes before, not doing it now, so it's knowing, and when is it, I'm intentionally not paying my taxes because of whatever reason or no reason at all?
Okay. So first of all, I think we need to look closely at the statute's language because Minnesota statute doesn't say in any manner. That's the federal statute that says in any manner. Our statutes...
Who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat a tax? I mean, I'm reading from the statute.
Oh, actually, Subdivision 1A...
Talking about 1A... Yeah.
Uses any manner. 1B doesn't. Sorry. Willfully attempts to evade, because 1B says a person required to pay who willfully attempts to evade or defeat a tax by failing to do so when required is guilty of a felony. 1A says a person required to file a return.
But aren't we under 1A?
We're under both.
Well, doesn't 1B, what does 1B apply to then? I'm a little confused.
Failing to pay the tax. 1A applies to failing to file the return.
I thought that dealt with people who took employees withholding taxes and didn't pay it.
Nope, it's not just that.
Right. All right, okay, thanks for clarifying that.
1B is a person who's required to pay a tax, right? That's one kind of person under 1B, an income tax.
The complaint is... Are there 1B allegations in the complaint?
Yes, there are 5 counts from alleging violations
of
1A and 5 counts from
1B. Okay, thanks. Thank you for clarifying that.
So to the extent that there's some difference between the two provisions, the statute does say for 1A, who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat a tax, but then it goes on to use the same by. It specifies by failing to file. And I think what you get here is these kind of circumstances where you've got substantial income, substantial payments that the the respondent is aware of, that he's using for his own purposes as if they were his own income, that he's historically prepared his own taxes and filed them, albeit using a program. He's paid his taxes. He registered his LLC with the Secretary of State, but then he failed to continue the annual renewals, which are required by statute. He's doing a whole host of things that demonstrate...
Counsel, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you're reciting accurately the facts. I appreciate that. But I'm still stuck a bit on your argument that we do not receive much guidance by looking at the federal statute and the case law, in, for example, in Spies, which suggests that, you know, and it, I appreciate there are some differences in language, although, as we just talked about, pretty a lot of similarity in 1A. But what the court held, as I understood it, is that this statute requires to get to the felony level. Again, let me emphasize that because, yes, we I don't think anybody's debating whether this complaint stated presented probable cause for the gross misdemeanor. But the felony level, we have to have willful commission of the act under Spies and willful omission. This is just perhaps persuasive authority for us. I appreciate that. But, you know, it is the Supreme Court. It seems to have held the test of time. So help me with that. How, where are the facts that you have alleged or the evidence that you presented that goes to this willful omission? Everything I hear you describe, the list you were just giving us, the briefing, it looks like simple omission as opposed to willful omission.
I think if it were a matter of maybe the first year after you maybe became a, you know, a person who has 1099 income instead of W-2 income, that might be something that would be simply an omission. At some point in time, though, when you know you have substantial income, you're repeatedly failing to file and failing to pay. It's not even a matter of he's acknowledging his tax responsibility by filing a return and then saying, hey, look, I don't have the money to pay. And failing to pay. At least then we might have an indication that the person wasn't trying to completely avoid and evade their tax obligation. But I think when you have both the repeated failure to file and the repeated failure to pay, coupled with the receipt of substantial amounts of money on a yearly basis, and the kind of dropping off the radar as far as the registration of the LLC goes, those are enough to get us to probable cause to allow a jury to decide whether it's whether the only reasonable inference here is that this was a willful purpose to evade tax. And I think an important.
I understand that you know you've described the record in this case accurately. The argument I read from opposing counsel says, you know, it's case law that mostly looked at sufficiency of the evidence after conviction, so that is a slight difference, but relevant to our analysis, I think, in that it appears that you're asking for a significantly watered-down version of the statute in contrast to what we have seen where these types of convictions have been upheld in the past. And just, you know, looking at the Beattie case, for instance, it wasn't just omission in that case. There were affirmative statements made by, in that case, the appellant, in an attempt to reverse the conviction, you know, there were affirmative statements from which the jury could infer the intent, the purposefulness.
And certainly it would be great if we had affirmative statements, but as this court is well aware, generally we're looking at circumstantial evidence to ascertain an individual's state of mind, and that's what we have here.
So do you have any case law that you can suggest where the sufficiency of this type of evidence has been upheld in showing willfulness, which, as I said, to me, sounds like you're arguing it from repeated omission. You know, it's not.
Well, I kind of disagree that it's just repeated omission. But there is, I'm not aware of any case law in Minnesota. In fact, the two cases that the district court relied on aren't even sufficiency of the evidence cases, as I pointed out in my brief. So they're not even, like, quite frankly, persuasive. The simple fact that somebody was charged and a jury convicted him in this court and didn't never said anything about the sufficiency of the evidence is no evidence, no authority whatsoever. That's not what those cases are. And I think this focus on behavior is because of essentially an attempt to read our statute as if it's the federal statute, and it's simply not. And I think an important
behavior. I mean, I looked at that word, and I think the way I see the district court using that word behavior really is an indication that we had to look at what happened or didn't happen as sort of circumstantial evidence of intent. So to that extent, I think it is going to the assessment of whether there's a willful attempt to evade.
I disagree with that analysis, with that assessment of the district court's attempt at analysis here. I think the cases it cited that dealt with false claims of residency demonstrate that it was looking at the wrong kind of
but
thing.
It seems to me the district court was most guided by our non-precedential decision in Beatty, which it involved some different facts that are that seems to me are lacking here. I mean, in that case, you had the tax professional asking for stuff, Mr. Beatty not giving it to the tax professional. Mr. Beatty, you know, withholding taxes, you know, for his employees, but then not filing his own taxes. Having conversations, making omissions about, well, what are they going to do, fine me if I don't pay taxes? We don't have anything, any kind of circumstances like that from which to infer attempt to evade, do we? Or willful attempt to evade?
I don't think we have those kind of splashy circumstances here. But again, the concept of sufficiency and the concept of necessity are distinct concepts. Just because this court recognized that those things were sufficient in Beatty doesn't mean they're required under the statute. I see my time has expired. I'd ask this court to reverse. I'll be back on rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Wilds on behalf of respondent Daniel O'Day. We are here to determine what the proper interpretation of Minnesota Felony Tax Evasion Statute 289A.63 is. Specifically, what is the actus reus in the statute? Is there an affirmative act implied by the terms attempts to evade in the statute? Or does mere passively failing to meet a requirement constitute an attempt to evade? The answer to this is clear based on that the legislature intended there to be an affirmative act requirement. Let us start with what comes to mind when we think of a tax evasion. We think of someone falsifying records. We think of someone forming sham companies. We think of someone doing some sort of effort or endeavor to undermine tax laws. We don't think of someone simply doing nothing.
Well, why isn't failing to file taxes? That seems like an act to me, not filing when you're required to file or to pay a tax and not doing so. It seems to me that's the act that the legislature is prescribing, isn't it?
Sorry.
This statute, at least.
No, I believe that's not an act. It's an omission of an act. Those are completely separate as defined by, you know, federal law and, just the definition of what is an act, you know, an attempt.
Well, or an attempt. Failing to file.
Yeah, and But the main action word and action phrase in this statute is attempt or attempts to evade is the main action phrase, so the actus reus of the statute, and the plain dictionary definition of attempt is an effort or endeavor, and evade is...
Well, why can't... Here there's evidence that your client did not renew his business registration, which could be interpreted as, oh, I'm trying to hide from that I'm even in business from the state and from... the state revenue system, tax system, intermingling personal and business. There are four different bank accounts. I mean, why can't that be evidence of something more insufficient then for somebody who repeatedly, even though he's gotten these 1099 forms showing income, he knows he owes some personal income tax because he at least paid those before, Why isn't that enough? Why isn't that sufficient?
And yes, to go back to your first point, you asked about not renewing. There is no connection between the Department of Revenue system and the Secretary of State system. It doesn't fall off. And there's no, in the entity here, there's no registration requirement with the Department of Revenue. That's only required if there's a separate entity filing, if you're withholding employee taxes. So there's no requirement for this entity. There's plenty. The Department of Revenue still accepts 1099s, whether they don't check if it's registered with it.
He knew he was supposed to register the business, but didn't. Isn't that evidence of hiding? It doesn't mean he has to be an expert in the tax system.
No, there is no requirement for him to file with the Department of Revenue. He had no extra filing.
To register his business. He did register it.
That
and then
is
it's
disputed.
Like, oh, I guess I'm not going to, you know, you get reminders, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's alleged that he registered it. We haven't gotten past omnibus.
Well, we have to assume that's true, right?
Yes.
Because that's the evidence that was submitted in the omnibus. I mean, our standard on review.
Yes.
Okay.
But, I mean, registering with the... Renewing your registration only provides personal benefit. It doesn't provide any... There's no personal benefit for letting it lapse. An LLC is meant to protect you from liability.
Oh, it's for the public to know who you are and that you're you know, who to serve with notice and...
No, right? I mean, well, that information's still there to the public, whether it's active or inactive.
The business? I don't know. Okay, go ahead. I don't mean to be argumentative. Go ahead with your...
No, argument. And I want to clarify any of your arguments, and that's why I'm here.
So, Council, I guess what I'm trying to understand is it seems to me that the appellant's argument is that they have alleged a series of facts in the complaint, as well as produced some evidence now pursuant to the Florence packet, and that from that evidence, inferences of willful evasion of taxes or of hiding can be made against your client, which is all they need to do to survive a motion for judgment of acquittal. So what's your argument? It seems to me you're saying don't take that inference, don't take that inference, which you definitely get to make that argument if this case proceeds, and the jury might accept it. But our analysis stops at whether a motion for judgment as a matter of for acquittal is the right thing to do based on the Florence packet.
Yeah, I mean, based on the evidence at hand, Your Honor, if that's all we're allowing, that would just leave the gross misdemeanor statute utterly worthless. And in these kind of situations, you know, we're not just dealing with one felony. We're dealing with tons of felony counts, which often pressures people into plea deals, even if there wasn't intent to evade, because, you know, they see the consequences they're facing. So this has, so there are, even if there's no intent, it, you know, just extreme procrastination and other reasons, you know, negligence, but not willful intent to evade. I mean, those people are, because of the lack of guidance provided by any court on the definition. So, and I want to go to why this is similar to the federal statute. I mean, the key language in both statutes between federal and state are the exact same. A person who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat a tax. That's the exact same as the federal definition. Any person who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat a tax imposed by the title is guilty of a felony. And as we can see in a prior court case from the Court of Appeals, unpublished, State v. Campbell in 2012, they look to the federal statute when determining interpretation of this of the Minnesota felony evasion statute. But in that case, the mens rea was at issue, and they upheld, and they said, yes, we should look at the Cheeks v. United States 1991 case to determine what willfulness means. And that definition does carry over to Beatty. They're very similar, but Beatty doesn't cite, you know, that Campbell case or any federal statute, but they're very similar in nature. And I also want to go to other statutes, you know, that are in Minnesota's books that would potentially better fit what the state's argument is on the interpretation. Let's look at the motor vehicle tax. That states, the gross misdemeanor motor vehicle tax is any person who, with intent to escape or with intent to prevent the payment or collection of the tax. Well, if that's what the legislature wanted to do, just intent, they would have said in this statute, with intent to evade, but they didn't. They said attempts to evade, which is clearly them taking it from the federal statute and wanting to copy the enforcement. But if we look at the felony statute for motor vehicle tax, Minnesota statute 297B.10, they do use the term attempts to evade or defeat a tax imposed by that statute. So again, there's one that says with intent to escape, which is a gross misdemeanor, and one that says attempts to evade, which is the felony statute. So clearly, just the intent is the legislature has interpreted to be less than attempt, an action, an act, something more that would rise it to a felony. Then we can also look at how other states have dealt with this issue. You can look across all the states and their felony tax evasion statutes. All the states have a bifurcated approach to this issue. A lot deal accept the federal's definition and put attempts to evade. Then there's substantial amount that said, no, we want it to be a little less and adopted with intent to evade, as I noted earlier. Such as Wisconsin and Iowa, they both adopted the language with intent to evade, not attempts to evade. Clearly, they want to do something different than the federal. Minnesota decided to copy the federal and the attempts to evade statute. When the courts in other states have looked at this issue, I want to go with my first example is Idaho. They use attempts to evade. In State v. Gilbert in 1987, they looked at that language, attempts to evade, and determined This is a copying the federal statute, and we need to interpret it as such, because that's what the legislature intended. In that case, they did cite to the Spies case and said, this is the standard that we will be using going forward. And this wasn't just Idaho. There are other cases that use this standard as well. There's Massachusetts, Missouri, North Carolina, Hawaii, and many of them do cite the Spies case as well. But again, if we're...
So, counsel, I understand you to be arguing that this statute requires the state to offer, to present its initial case, survive probable cause challenge, to present some evidence or from allegations from which evidence could be produced of an additional evasive act. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah, the affirmative act requirement.
If we disagree with you on that and instead follow the analysis the appellant is urging, which is to suggest this is really just an expression of a specific intent requirement, intent to willfully invade,
yep.
do we then reverse the district court? I mean, or are you still able to hold on to your victory?
No, Your Honor, and that was actually going to be my next point I was getting into. The dismissal should still be upheld based on the clear diction, the dismissal should, because, again, it would leave the interpretation the state's alleging would just leave the gross misdemeanor statute worthless if we're just solely looking at filing history and failing to do stuff by inaction, here nothing, there's nothing at hand, there's no circumstantial evidence, there's nothing totality, I guess, that would show any difference between someone just doing nothing with intent to evade or doing nothing without intent to evade. There needs to be something more.
So what is missing here?
Yeah, so one thing I'd allege is, well, let's look at the professions at hand. We're not dealing with, someone sophisticated profession, we're an appliance installer. That would be an additional surrounding fact if we're going based on the states. A lavish lifestyle. The record cites my client had was driving older vehicles in a renter of an average size home. If he was, it would show motive, if he was living some lavish lifestyle, but, not paying his taxes. There's no surrounding circumstances that would give rise to, to make a reasonable person think that there's an intent.
He was out gambling. I mean, we know he got $120,000 from gambling. So could that be that evidence? And why not, if not?
No, Your Honor. W2Gs only report gross winnings. It doesn't show, where someone ends up. Did they net positive or net loss?
You've got cash to go gambling with and apparently large sums because that's a significant sum of money. Would that be evidence of, is that enough evidence?
No, Your Honor.
Get over the probable cause standard here? That's all we're talking about.
No, for gambling, those just show, what came in. So, it could be like the same, dollars going back and bouncing back and forth. Now, doesn't mean he ever had that amount of money. And, just like we know from typical gambling, everyone loses. The casino is always the winner. So
that's a lot of assumptions. Okay.
Yes, and I understand, the record is not full at this point, but...
So would you specifically address the failure of, and you've talked about the legality of registration, what the registration of the transportation company with the Secretary of State. So you've talked about that, what the legal implications are. But what about the inference that the appellant urges that we draw? So basically, Mr. O'Day was trying to hide the transportation company by initially registering it, but then allowing the registration to expire.
Is that
a fair inference that can be drawn?
No, Your Honor. I think it draws more. He was just someone negligent with responsibilities and not someone attempting. It's the easiest thing ever.
You have to view the evidence, though, in a light favorable to the state, right? Because it's a probable cause challenge.
Yes, Your Honor. And, again, there's nothing that would make him fall off the record by failing to renew. You can still see it there. It's not like my client was open to business,
What about the fact that apparently this business received, quite a bit of income, all right, that was reported in 1099s. Don't know if that's accurate or not, but at least the 1099s are there. And yet the business didn't pay any taxes. and it didn't pay any taxes for many years, not just 1 year. Is that enough to raise an inference of hiding?
No, Your Honor. I mean, there can be many different reasons why someone didn't, and they're all equally as likely. We need something, you know, like give someone a strong suspicion, you know, that there was intent to evade if we're going based on the state's interpretation. I mean, that's, you know, how it would look in any other case, you know, someone's getting 1099s. And I mean, as stated in this, the auditor's findings, when he was reviewing it, Mr. O'Day never actually received those funds, but something substantially smaller than what was actually reported on those 1099s. And, you know, all the other different expenses that go with it that he'd have to pay. So obviously, you know, based on, you know, what the auditor's finds, you know, he had substantial expense. He paid out of pocket. He didn't actually receive the substantial amount. You know, it's kind of unclear, you know. And there just need to be more, you know, more investigation, more finding more circumstances that would have to give rise to what the state's alleging for there to be probable cause.
Let me ask you this. The state is urging us to make our opinion in this case precedential. A, do you agree with that? And B, what would you have our rule of law be?
Yes, Your Honor. I completely agree that this should be a precedential decision so that there's clarity across all districts. I represent individuals all across the state and all different counties, and they have many different interpretations on this matter, so I completely agree. What I would like the court to adopt is the federal standard with the attempts to evade being an affirmative act requirement, which is what the legislature intended. I see my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Smith, you will have the last word.
I want to start by revisiting the federal statute, and I want the court to look carefully at the structure of the federal statute and compare it against the structure of Minnesota's statute. And I think the important thing about the structure of the federal statute is that it creates a misdemeanor crime. That misdemeanor crime uses the same mens rea language of willful as the felony crime. The misdemeanor is the willful failure to file or pay. The felony crime is a willful attempt to evade in any manner. Now, if Minnesota had adopted the federal statute wholesale and had a misdemeanor that used willful and a felony that used the language of willful, then I agree that an interpretation of the willful attempt to evade in Minnesota's statute consistent with the with the interpretation in the federal statute would be reasonable. But I maintain that it's not reasonable because that's not what the Minnesota legislature did. And this court has recognized that federal cases interpreting federal statutes are not persuasive when there are textual differences between the federal statute and Minnesota's statute. I can point the court to a case in a different context in the human rights context, Cummings versus Cohenin, 568 Northwest 2nd, 418, where this court refused to follow federal cases interpreting Title VII because the language of the Minnesota Human Rights Act was not similar. That's the case here. The language here is not similar because the legislature in Minnesota further specified the actus reus in the felony crime. The Congress didn't do that in the federal statute. Here, it's by failing to file or by failing to pay. Minnesota's statute is limited to that conduct. We have to show, the state has to show in order to bring this charge that the person failed to pay or failed to file. We can't bring this charge if the person simply kept a false set of books and was trying to evade tax that way. You can under the federal statute. That's something that comes within the ambit of the federal statute because the federal statute is broader. But here our legislature added an actus reus, a specific actus reus. And so instead of searching for a hidden second actus reus of a crime, what we have is a specification of attendant circumstances along with a mens rea requirement. And for that reason, there are significant differences here. It was that language of an attempt to evade that the federal court, that the United States Supreme Court had to interpret to provide some meaningful distinction between the federal statute creating the misdemeanor and the federal statute creating a felony. Our statute uses different mens rea language, knowingly for the gross misdemeanor and willful attempt to evade. In Beattie, this court interpreted willful attempt to evade wholesale as the mens rea requirement. I recognize that that's not a precedential decision, but I think it's persuasive. I think it's fairly, it's well reasoned in that regard, and this court should follow that here.
One thing that throws me a little bit with Beattie, and I'm just curious if you have some thoughts on this. So Beattie is a case, as we've referenced before, that was an appeal from a conviction. In that case, the jury instructions were not challenged on appeal, and the court, in its opinion, candidly notes that, well, these instructions were given, and so we're going to apply the instructions because there's no challenge to the instructions. So that's basically where they drew that rule of law that now we're all repeating. It's from jury instructions that weren't challenged on appeal. Which is the proper thing to do in the appellate world, but does that then give us much guidance?
I don't know that I would say much guidance. I think it's persuasive. I think that interpretation and that rule of law, which this court applied because it's what the jury instructions were, is a reasonable reading of the statute, and I think that's consistent with the structure of our statute. We distinguish between the two crimes, which have the same actus reus, which is failure to pay or failure to file. In Minnesota, the two crimes, the misdemeanor, the gross misdemeanor, and the felony, have the same actus reus. We distinguish between them by the mens rea, knowingly and willful attempt to evade. That makes sense of all of the provisions of the statute. It makes sure that the by failing to file or failing to pay actually does work in the statute, and it recognizes the distinctions with the federal statute. For that reason, I ask this court to adopt that interpretation and reverse the dismissal of the felony charges. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your helpful arguments and briefing. We really appreciate it. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. That is the final matter on our calendar for oral argument this morning, so we are in recess.
All rise.